This session was recorded at Journey Underground, a recovery ministry of Journey Christian Church in Fairbanks, Alaska.
All right. So my wife quit going to her massage therapist because she just really felt like they really rubbed her the wrong way. Oh, man, come on. That was the first one. So we reached a place in our study and in our sessions that I always look for, no matter what the curriculum is that I'm looking at. And we've looked at a lot of them, a lot of different ways of changing, a lot of spiritual programs, secular programs, whatever it is. We've looked at a lot of different systems. If you study anything, any method of any kind, there's everyone's got kind of a take on it. And we've reached that place, what I call the exchange. And no matter what it is you're studying in recovery, there's that moment and that time and that place where you begin to make a swap, where you begin turning in some things and receiving some things in their place. And from here on out throughout the wintertime, you know, I'm real excited to say that it's just going to kind of be a continuous session throughout how this works. I don't know, different problem areas and hot spots a person will run into in their recovery. You know, one of our sessions is coming up that's about finding your feast in the presence of your enemies. You know, when you're surrounded by people that just really want your demise and want you to fall, how to find that place where God feeds you in that place, and what a wonderful thing that is, and stuff like that, where we're going to just really come up against some stuff. But here we've reached a place of exchange. And I really love the setup my sister gave me there about grace and about how it all works, because we're exchanging at the deepest level. We're exchanging lies for truth. You know, I think as Christians, we hear that a lot. I know I have. But what is it we're exchanging? Lies that have come from others onto us. You know, do you remember the first time someone imposed on you some kind of lie about yourself that you took on? Like, I'm going to go ahead and wear that, you know, and it's very painful. And it's important to sit down in a small group or one-on-one with the sponsor and talk about that very thing. When you're young, you begin to form a person that can live and survive. And so when that person you began to form, that person began to protect you and stand in front of you, what is that made of, this person? And who's the person behind him that he's protecting? And this is the kind of stuff that has been life-changing to begin working out. If you could interview your protective personality, what would he say? And if he could step aside, what would that person behind him be like? And that can be very frightening. That's why we need support. Not only are we exchanging lies that have come from others, but lies that we have ourselves imposed on ourselves, things that we have believed that come from us. This is so important. And again, just saying it from here doesn't do the work. But sitting down with somebody, you find details you'd never find just by hearing this. But really sitting down with a sponsor or someone that really knows your story and walking those very intimate things out. I mean, I've heard from, you know, grown men stories of something their father, when their father said a certain thing or did something. Or one guy that I talked to remembers when his dad was drunk and pointed a gun at him and was just shaking. And how when he put the gun down, it just marked him so deeply. Forever, he walked and carried that moment that his dad hated him so much he wanted to shoot him. And through the kind of counseling and the teaching where we begin to see our protective personalities and these sometimes cowering people behind them, he began to see a Jesus that wasn't just concerned with compliance, but a Jesus that he saw actually was standing between him and his father, keeping him protected and from being shot. And so that moment became, instead of a moment of horror and lies, but became a moment between him and God of protection and care on a much deeper level. And that's the kind of stuff I'm talking about. So we are exchanging in spiritual growth temporary appearances for spiritual realities, for what is real. And what I mean by that is if you were to drop dead right now, who you really are would rise up and you would know who you really are for the first time. And we're talking about spiritual reality, what is real. And that's what Jesus referred to as walking in the light, where he is the one that makes sense of this life. So we're making this exchange. I was an addict for almost my entire life. Very heavy needle user, crack smoker, pill taker, all those things. And I've had to deal with so many of my ways about myself that are still addict thinking. But I needed love growing up, security, safety. I needed to feel like I was adequate and able to face the world. Chemicals did both of those things for me in a very powerful way. So when I make the exchange, you know, okay, I'm going to lay down what gave me a sense of security and comfort. I'm going to lay it down. You know, that need is still there. And that sense of adequacy of having strength and power and able to face the world, when I lay that down, that need is still there. I still need comfort and security and a sense of adequacy to face the world and how those things work. So I need new coping skills. I need new coping strategies at a very deep level. I don't know about you, but I know for me, my addiction and my life of addiction became so painful that to go on any further living that way, I could not imagine going on like it anymore. I couldn't even imagine how horrible my life was going to be to continue living that way. And to stop living that way, I think that seemed even worse. So you find yourself in this place where to go on, I cannot possibly. To stop, I cannot possibly do it. And so many people meet the living God in that place. You're walking right into his office when you find yourself in such a place. Thank God for that. As you notice, even with the children of Israel, our enslavement becomes so hard that we cry out to God. Last week, Andrew did a great, great job. I wish I had the accent. You know, I think that would get me somewhere. Probably give me a raise, I think, maybe. Working on that. That's where Rosetta Stone comes in a very strong way. I did some personality tests for some of that stuff, but, you know, it said I was really low on empathy, but, you know, I couldn't care less. Just kidding. Hey, that one worked. It was right there. It was right there the whole time. It was in me. See, it was in me. You know, it's weird. When I went to school, you know, it was funny because they just called me Mr. Handsome, right? And I'd walk in. You know, they'd find an attribute about you and call you that in school. And I'd walk in, they'd say, hey, Mr. Handsome. And I'd be like, you know, come on, guys. We have schoolwork to do. You know, I know. But what was really weird is this other guy who was really huge. I mean, he was huge. They called him tiny, you know. So for him, they called him the opposite of, hey, wait a minute. Okay. I took a real chance on that joke. I really didn't. So Andrew last week did an amazing job of painting that picture of the promised land. You know, when we see it, but we're not there yet. I mean, he did a great job. And I just felt poised right there on the bank, ready to cross that river into that promised land in these areas of my life. And he did an amazing job. But we have to remember that coming to that place of entering the promised land took a lot of wandering. It took a lot of pain. It took a lot of tests and failure and trials. A lot of raising up idols and tearing them down, raising them up again, tearing them down. I mean, it took a lot for us to get to that place. And the whole time we're walking through that desert and walking through the wilderness, we are being drawn powerfully back to that sense of security that we found in enslavement. I mean, it's strong. I don't know about you, but I'll make it a little bit of a romantic thing. You know, those needles and that experience or those pills, and at least I had this when I was doing that, you know, and I'll find that enslavement a little bit inviting as the things get kind of difficult for me. And that's why over and over he says, do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged. And that's why that Noah's battle cry of running across the field with that flag of worship's like, I'm going. The fight's on. I'm not going to stand here anymore. I'm going. And it begins with that cry of worship, that how he was singing out from his heart. I love it. But we all go through seasons, right? We all go through these different stages. And I imagine, Tony, and you guys have some really good teaching on this. I wanted to talk to you about this, but I didn't have time. But everyone goes through different seasons in their walk. And I'm sure there's different lists of how they go. But the idea is that we all go through a season and a time of obscurity, when we are unknown, unnoticed, ignored, left alone, left to sit in this position, in this place. Jesus went through all of these stages and he rocked the world. So I really trust God and his way. We go through times of popularity, and it is a surface level popularity. And we go through times of rejection, and we go through a time of glorification. And we can see and track so many people in the scriptures that went through these times and seasons. And we're all in maybe a different place. But we don't want to miss them. We don't want to miss any of these experiences in the desert, in the wilderness. We think we do, but we don't. We don't want to miss it. So could you imagine if you were getting married, or just imagine this young married couple, and they say, I do, and they're young and beautiful. They don't have all the little spots on them like that one or that one or that one or that one. That one's new. No. They're young and beautiful. And right when they say, I do, you push a button and they are instantly super old, and they've arrived and they know one another. They're one with one another, but they're there instantly. It's over. There they are. I mean, they have a perfect marriage. They're in complete union, but it's over. I mean, we would all know just by looking at that, that the joy is in every day, the ups and downs, that learning, you know, having the baby, you know, landing the job, wrecking the car, you know, all the times my wife's wrong in an argument, you know, over and over and over when she's wrong. All those times when she's learning. I'm losing points. Okay. I lost my job in the bank, you know, because a guy asked me to check his balance and I shoved him. I like that. I actually wrote that down, you know. Employment hasn't been the best to me. You ever do that thing where, you know, I have some felonies on my record, so I get nervous when I apply for a job. And I'm sure some of you have done this, where they hand you the paper application and you go to write and you write your name and you realize right then you just wrote it on the wrong column, you know? And so I'm like, I don't want to scratch it out, have a big scratch out mark on this and hand it to the guy. But if I leave it there, and it just dawns on you, I've already lost the job. and all I did was write my name, you know? Anyway. Okay. The joy is in that every single day, learning and growing. I learn things about her every day, and she learns things about me. It's rich. And when she looks over at me and sees me getting older, you know, there's an endearment there. And as we walk through the yard, we're learning how to dance together. You know, we're doing all these things. The joy is in walking that out, not in pushing a button and just being there. Okay? Well, how about this? If I have a problem in front of me and I'm hurting, I'm rejected, or I experience some kind of pain or some kind of horrible thing, a divorce, I could push a button and have peace. The first time my heart was broken, I remember I was very young. I'm not going to tell you who it is because you're going to make fun of me. But you'll be like, she broke your heart? No. But The first time my heart was broken, it was so crushed that I remember laying on the ground in the fetal position and bawling my eyes out. And the first thing I did was get up, and I realized this hurts so bad. And I went over to a buddy, and I said, I need you to get me some weed. And I mean, I want the best stuff you can find. And he did. And as soon as I smoked it, guess what? No more problem. Now, if some young guy came up to me later on and said, Stan, I'm going through a breakup, a divorce. I don't know how to deal with this pain. And you're an older person, and you know life. What do I do? I just go over to my drawer and pick up a baggie and say, this is all I know. What is that? I mean, is that what I want to offer someone that turns to me for wisdom that I've learned in this life? But I'll tell you, when I face pain and heartache and problems and things that are so difficult and I feel like I'm going to be crushed, and I wrestle with God, and I take scriptures to him, and I ask him questions, and I begin to work it out, and I call men around me and say, I'm hurting. I need your prayers. I'm confused. I am hurting so bad. And they pray with me and barely get me through the night. And I quote scriptures, and I hang them up, and I cry in the shower, and I call out to God. And it could be months later, I arrive at peace. Guess what? I have actually arrived at peace. I've done it. I've made it. And when someone turns to me and says, I'm hurting so bad, I don't know what to do, I could say, I know the way. I got some buddies. Let's go. And I can take them on a journey that I've been on myself over and over and over and over in many, many different ways. And I know as an addict, I am sick and tired of pushing that button, because we use because of all that it bypasses. And it's not real. It's not real. I haven't really found peace. I haven't really made the journey. I have done the thing where I said I do, push the button, and I'm there. What a waste. The joy is in the journey and the bumps and the bruises and the pain and the wrestling and the tears and the crying out and the confusion where he just won't give me the answer. And he's like, yes, yes, that process, that journey, yes, that's the stuff. But do we believe that God is the kind of God that wants to walk out with us every day of that journey through our slips and falls, through the times we don't believe and we sin, and the times that we get back up and dust ourselves off, call our sponsor, start over again? Do we really believe he wants to walk with me in that way? And he absolutely does. Or is he just concerned with compliance? Does he just want me to obey? That's all he's concerned with. And I just know that how the exchange begins is by not trying so hard to change my behavior, but by letting him make me something new. By letting me become a brand new creation where he is birthed in me a new light, where his presence comes to live within me. I didn't do it. He put it there. And all my energy can go in adoring that, embracing that, being thankful for that, living out of that. I mean, this is really how the change begins, where a revolution actually began in my heart. And that's why I think this idea of self has to change in the Christian world, where, you know, I'm a scumbag, but if anything good comes, it's only God, it's not me. I'm a dirtball, but he's wonderful. Because if we are born of God, as sons and daughters of God, what kind of person would God birth? Right? There have been times I've had interactions with people here where I walk away, and if I died on my way home, I would know, surely I have met the sons and daughters of God. I have met them. They have prayed with me. I know them. They walk among us. Because of the love that comes out So we come here to this place here, and I don't want to take a lot of time on this, but the two ministries that Jesus came to bring that I think brings a lot of confusion in the Christian world. Do with this what you want, but I've had to work this out. I think he had two ministries, and one of the time the thing that brings such confusion are the harsh words of Jesus, where we hear when we come to church and we come to a gathering like this, you know, come as you are, God's forgiveness, he's here, he loves you unconditionally, and then he says, sell everything you own. You know, then he says, if you don't forgive, you're not forgiven. If you're even angry, you murdered. If you look and lust, you've committed adultery. These are hard things. Be perfect. These are hard statements. I mean, I don't know about you, but these are the things that I think have brought me to my knees and saying, it seems like there's two different Jesuses. And I'll tell you, the two ministries I believe that Jesus came to bring was one, to bust pride. To bust it like a bowling ball going right down the middle, boom. And the other, to bring healing to the broken, the people that knew they had need and were broken and needed his healing power, his love. But he had to speak to those who did not believe they needed him and what he brought, right? When we think that we are strong because of our behavior and our keeping of his laws and statements and rules, you may end up having a conversation with him the way he spoke to the Pharisees. And I'll tell you what I mean. You guys remember when they were doing the Olympic trials on the ski run, when the guys were going so fast when they hit the bottom that they were going like 90 miles an hour, and it was like no way. I mean, they were just going way too fast. So what they did was they lowered the starting point. And what Jesus is doing with so many statements is the most loving thing he could do, is he isn't lowering the starting place, he's raising it. He's raising it to a height so high, and then he skis an absolutely perfect course, flawless, wins the gold medal, and says, here, I did this for you. I did it as you. And by the way, stay off that mountain. Because if you try that, you're going to end up hurting yourself and a lot of other people as well. Don't go there. I mean, I don't know what you see, but this is what I see. Where he raises the bar till they say, well, then who can be saved? Aha. With you guys, with man, it's impossible. With God, all things are possible. This has confronted me at the deepest level. That God does not like lower his standard down to us. He raises us to his and says, here, there's no place for pride. I've done it for you. Live out of that. That's where you focus your attention. When he talks about forgiving someone, if you don't forgive them, you're not forgiven. I mean, that's a tough one for some people. We hear stories so horrible. Well, we have to remember that he's talking to people who were so consumed with their behavior to the point where they couldn't even like tie a little knot because it was work on Sunday, on the Sabbath. They couldn't even spit in the sand because it was making concrete. I mean, they were so consumed with every move they made, they didn't care anything about people. Loving people. They were hating people. They actually reached a point where they were so self-consumed that God himself could be standing next to them and they would kill him. And he is saying to them, it's not how you behave that makes you right with me. It's how you treat me. I want you to know that how you treat others, that's how you're treating me. The way you love others is the way you're loving me. And when you don't, you're not loving me. And you could hear his heart's cry. I'll read this a little bit to you here. With the arrival of Jesus the Messiah, the faithful dilemma is resolved. Those who enter into Christ being here for us no longer have to live under a continuous, low-lying black cloud. A new power is in operation. The spirit of the life in Christ, like a strong wind, has magnificently cleared the air, freeing you from a fated lifetime of brutal tyranny at the hands of sin and death. God went for the jugular when he sent his own son. He didn't deal with the problem as something remote and unimportant. In his son, Jesus, he personally took on the human condition, entered the disordered mess of struggling humanity in order to set it right once and for all. And the law code, that big mountain, weakened as it always was by fractured human nature, could never have done it. The law always ended up being a band-aid on sin instead of a deep healing. And now what the law code asked for, that high mountain, you know, but we couldn't deliver, it's accomplished as we, instead of redoubling our efforts, we simply embrace what the Spirit's doing in us. I mean, I could just, it's hard to stop reading. You know what happens when a new president comes into office? This would be a good place for a joke, but I don't have one. They immediately began to fire certain people and reposition them and put other people in their place, change laws they don't agree with. And he's saying a new power is in operation within you. And the first thing he begins to do is bring some conflict. I want that law changed within your heart. I want you to operate a new way. I want freedom here. Let's break this wall down. Let's renovate this whole place. You're on your computer and it says an update's available. If you want it, click here. I mean, that is so much the new walk. You know, something happens and I want to just blow up. Bing, an update's available, Stan, if you want it. I think our deepest experience that we can possibly have as believers is to agree with God in his ways and his thoughts and his view of us on the deepest level, that when we look in this mirror, we agree. I mean, I can't get past the first statement in some of these books, to the saints of God. Do you believe that? To the saints in Fairbanks. How about we just stay there for 5 years till we all believe that we are saints of God? I can't get beyond the beginning of so many of these books, that we need to find this place. God, if God himself has taken up residence in your life, you can hardly be thinking more of yourself than of him. Anyone, of course, who has not welcomed this invisible but clearly present God, the Spirit of Christ, they won't know what we're talking about. But for you who welcome him, in whom he dwells, even though you still experience all the limitations of sin, you yourself experience life on God's terms. It stands to reason that if the alive and present God who raised Jesus from the dead moves into your life, he'll do the same thing in you that he did in Jesus, bringing you alive to himself. Romans 8 is just amazing that we can come to God like the prodigal and have him run to us and embrace before we even get our little speech that we've concocted out. He's already loved us. The enemy wants us to act out of a threatened identity. He wants us to be freaking out. Jesus, at his baptism, remember when God broke and said audibly, "This is my son whom I'm well pleased, my beloved son." Before Jesus did anything in ministry. Established right there was, "This is my beloved son." And it was that statement that was challenged in the wilderness. So I can look at you and say, you are the beloved daughter of God. You're His daughter. You're so loved. How is that being challenged in your life, directly challenged? How is it challenged in you in the morning when you wake up from people or old beliefs? That's the stuff of the exchange. When I look at you and say, you are a beloved son, you're so loved by God, you're His son, how is that being challenged? This is the fight we're in. I don't know about you, but I'm facing some decisions I have made that have left me really scared financially. We believe we're called to move forward and help as many people as we can in recovery, to get a second location at the Journey Building and to have every group we can imagine going and be right there shepherding the whole time, making coffee for people, welcoming them, vacuuming in between, making sure everyone knows what's going on and where the help can be found, getting training in sexual addiction, substance abuse, all of it. Just be there as an instrument. Standing in that place where someone's ready, we have their hand. And I'm going to stand next to you. Just like my sponsor Dave stood next to me, I'm going to stand next to you, and as long as I'm standing, you're standing, we're standing together. That's what we've been called to. And I quit my Fred Meyer job, you know, to do this and devote more of our time to it, and I wake up in the middle of the night terrified. And he wants me grasping. What do you look like when you are grasping and panicked, full of anxiety? What does it look like when you grasp for what you think you need? How small does your life get? I can promise you, my life gets as small as a pill, because I think that's the thing I need. If I could just get that, and I'm grasping and I'm drowning, and my life actually gets as tiny as a pill, or as tiny as a job. He says, be still and know I'm God. I look at creation, I can't deny. You are so wise, Creator God, you're so wise. I'll end with this one little story, if you guys would just give me this one story here. I listening to a guy tell a story about his mother-in-law. Another place for a good joke. His mother-in-law hated him deeply. And he married into another race, and she hated him, their family traditions, all of it. She used every opportunity to spite him, to make him feel rejected and like an outcast. And it hurt him so bad. And this went on for years. He, as a believer, wanted to challenge this. He wanted to change it. It hurt him so bad. There was times he said, I can't go on and do this anymore. And he would get some support, talk to people. I need some wisdom here. Pray. He got to spend the holidays with them. And he brought his really fancy, expensive camera. And he just started firing pictures in the background. Didn't make himself obvious. Just started taking pictures. And come Christmas time, they did a gift exchange. And this is a true story. And wouldn't you know it, she gets his name and he gets hers. Comes time for him to open his gift. And of course, it was another shot at sliding him, making him feel stupid. Just the dumbest looking pair of socks. You know, it was just a complete slight. And he just felt so rejected. But he had the wisdom of men, spiritual advisors, counsel of God. He wrestled in this whole thing, and he gave her gift, and when she opened it and began to look at it, she broke down and began to just cry and cry, and it was the turning point in their relationship completely. And what she found was a very, very nice photo album full of pictures of her at her best, of her loving her grandchildren, of her being amazing, at her shining with this motherly love and a kindness, and every picture was her just incredible. And she looked up at him, and this is what she said. She said, "You have captured my goodness." And she was overwhelmed because she knew the person behind the lens had to see it for it to even be there. And what a chance he had to do all the opposite, but he didn't. And I just want you to know that the wisest eyes in all of creation, in the universe, in the world, are upon you. And the declaration is, you are loved. You are my people. You are the saints of God to shine as lights in this world. When you look on his fridge at your picture, I promise you, I would give my life for it. He's captured your goodness. The way he sees you, you must see it. You must get it. You must know it. And that's why he calls us a mirror, that you are sons. Spirit cries out in you, Daddy, Father. The first thing he wants you to know is who your dad is. And that's how the exchange begins. So through the winter, we're going to be pouring our hearts out on this identity and on the hot spots that we hit in trying to walk this out and trying to move forward. And I just really expect a powerful winter time. Let me pray for you. Father, just thank you so much for who you are and the dignity you give us in being able to be your image bearer in this world. That the stage is set and we are your visible presence. We get to carry it. We get to implement things and speak things and be things. And you put them in our hearts to live. And we have such freedom to be you in this world. And we're most like you when we're loving other people. And I just pray, God, the gospel would just sink in tonight. I pray against religion. I pray against the legalism. I pray the yoke would be broken and we would be free to live as the people of God, who you've made us to be, sons and daughters of God. Thank you, guys.